Welcome to the This Week in Rays Baseball podcast. Here's your host, Neil Solons.
Welcome to our latest podcast on this Thursday, November the 5th. The World Series is done. We have finished one marathon. We get ready for another one as we prepare for 2016. And we'll be chatting a little bit about my trip to the Arizona Fall League a little bit later. But joining us now, someone who's very familiar with the marathon. In fact, his daughter just finished a marathon in New York City. Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times joining us today.
Exactly. It was actually quite tiring following her running around the marathon in New York City. But it was a great accomplishment, so thank you.
And obviously a great accomplishment for the Kansas City Royals. You know, you got to cover a portion of the playoffs. Have you had much conversation or at least trading of text messages with guys like Ben since they won the World Series or during the playoffs? What was your interaction? I know I traded a couple texts with Ben, and obviously he's elated with it's been the year of the Zobris, kind of.
Exactly. Yeah, I've been in touch with a couple of those guys, and obviously I think we all saw Johnny Gomes' epic speech, and I guess you wouldn't even call it a mic drop. I guess it was the mic toss. The mic flip, I guess. Let's just go all the way Jose Bautista on him. It was the Johnny Gomes mic flip the other day. But, you know, look, we're journalists, and you know, we don't ever really root for anybody or any team or anything. But you meet people along the way, and it's just natural to want to see good things happen to them. And I think certainly in the case of the three guys, and really four guys we're talking about, Johnny Gomes, I think he's a favorite of many people who are covering every team he's been on. Ben Zobrist, obviously one of the best, you know, all-around people you're going to meet. Wade Davis, you know, very quiet, but you know, always congenial and, you know, always cooperative. And don't forget Dave Island. I mean, he's a huge part of what the Royals have done and a local Tampa Bay area guy and came through the Rays organization as a player in those dark green days and also as a special assistant had a huge role, actually, as we found out, and I reported earlier this season, in the development of Chris Archer during his year, during Dave Island's year as a special assistant for the Rays. So all four of those guys, you got to be happy for them, and what the way the Royals did it too, it's got to be encouraging to the Rays, and you know, a smaller market team, a team that builds around developing its own players, that supplements with some free agents, and maybe a little higher shelf than the Rays work off of, but not the top tier type of team, not a Yankees, Red Sox, you know, Dodgers type of thing. So I think it's got to be encouraging for the Rays in that regard as well.
I agree. And, you know, probably as you mentioned, a little less margin for error for the Rays. I mean, and part of that is the Royals jumped up to 2.7 million in attendance. It gave them the, you know, a little more room to work with and make the kind of deals they did at the deadline, getting Ben and getting Johnny Cueto. But even before that, you know, they seem to make every right decision. I mean, you know, you look back to 09 and the way things went with Pat Burrell, and then you look at Kendrys Morales and what a miraculous season he had, and Rios had a good year, and Ryan Madsen. I mean, they clicked on basically every spot they hit on free agent-wise.
They did, and then, you know, again, I think that goes to show two things. It shows, you know, as we talked about, that you don't necessarily have to sign the top-tier guys. None of those guys you mentioned, especially their free agent signings, were the top-of-the-market guys, and even Cueto and Zobrist probably weren't the biggest names available at the trade deadline. I mean, you can look around at what other teams did and tried to do. So I think it shows, you know, that it can be done on a lesser budget, but it also shows, as you say, less margin for error. You have to be right. You know, the Rays' forays into free agency haven't been particularly good, and you know, Burrell is the one that's always going to jump out at us. There have been a couple other guys along the way, and, you know, you can even debate, you know, semantically bringing James Loney back. He was a free agent when they brought him back, and I don't think that has worked out necessarily as well as they had hoped. So, you know, the Rays have had mixed results in that, but I think if you make the right decisions, you get a little bit of luck. And we talk about this, you know, almost every time a team wins, unless it's one of those, you know, top market, big budget, dynastic type teams. Anyone else, when they win, usually what you're saying is, oh, they had a little bit of luck. They had some guys had career years. They made some good moves that paid off. They made some right decisions. You know, all those things tend to factor into championship teams, at least in baseball, and that's certainly been the case with the Royals.
And one other thing that I thought, you know, I think can be taken away from this, and you look at the Giants, they've won three World Series, and the Royals winning a World Series. You got four of the last six champions. They don't hit home runs, so you don't have to hit the home run. Everyone talks about the power the Rays are lacking. With their ballpark, with athletic teams, et cetera, you can play that way and win.
And you're right, Neil, and I think in a way that's how the Rays used to play, and you know, you hate to say used to as in the old days when they were, you know, in the playoffs, but it's been a couple of years now, and those Rays teams were more athletic than the current teams that we've seen. They did take advantage of their speed. The good defense is obviously a trademark, a hallmark. You saw that with the Royals. The pitching is good. The dominant bullpen. I mean, these are all ingredients that should look familiar to Rays fans from years past. And you know, the other thing is the hitting approach. And I talked to Matt Silverman a week or so ago about this, wrote about it last weekend. And, you know, the Royals hitting approach, you know, a lot was made of it on the broadcast. A lot was made of it during the postseason. You know, this contact-oriented, aggressive approach. And, you know, Matt did acknowledge that, you know, there is an evolution going on. They have certainly taken note of that, that the, you know, idea of a few years ago when it was in vogue to work up pitch counts to get the starter out of the game, you wanted to get into that bullpen. Well, that's changed now, and that's because the bullpens have gotten so good with so many of the teams. And in a way, the Rays were ahead of the curve on that. That was part of their formula a few years ago. You know, their bullpens were so good that even if their starting pitchers got knocked out, they felt pretty good about it. But you do see this offensive approach having shifted now. We saw the Rays during this past season change, you know, right around the end of July to a little bit of a more aggressive approach, not so much contact-oriented. They still had a lot of guys who struck out quite a bit, Steven Souza Jr., the one that comes to mind. But, you know, I think you're seeing an evolution. I think the Rays have acknowledged it. They've noted it. And I think you may see that become more, you know, common for other teams. It's a copycat business. Most pro sports leagues are.
And we start to evolve and shift. And, you know, you talk about athleticism. Well, the Rays certainly have some athletic defenders, maybe not the athleticism from 08 to 10, but Kevin Kiermaier's got, I would think, as good a shot as any of winning a gold glove. I was a little surprised Evan Longoria was a finalist, not because he didn't have a good year, but just because there's so many good third basemen in the American League.
I agree, and you know, part of this process is there's not as much transparency in the gold glove process as there are in some of the other awards that are given out, and you know, it's a voting of the coaches and managers in the American League, you know, for the other, basically they vote for the other 14 teams. They can't vote for their own team. So, you know, you do have a problem in some of these awards. And that's why, and I know you and I have talked about this on previous versions of your award-winning podcast, that Kevin Kiermaier deserves to win the Gold Glove. I think that's a fair statement to make. But that doesn't mean he's going to win it, because some coaches and some managers are going to vote on reputation. Some are going to vote for guys that they think are good guys. They're going to vote for guys they like. They're going to vote for guys that are maybe better overall players, quote-unquote, who had better offensive statistics, which should have absolutely nothing to do with the Gold Glove. And I'm not going to defend the process. And if he doesn't win it, I'm sure I'll be among the people, you know, pointing out the fallacy of the process. But that's still how it works. There is a statistical component. That statistical component will be strongly in Kiermaier's favor. But you just don't know how this voting is going to work. I mean, you know, Neil, you've been in baseball clubhouses for, you know, a long time. Sometimes these type of things get thrown at a coach and they just don't get to it. And then suddenly there's a PR director or a PR staffer saying, hey, I need that ballot back. And the coach is like, oh, yeah, I forgot to do it. And, you know, it's been 15 seconds on filling it out. So you'd like to think they give thought to it. They give, you know, some study, some acknowledgement of statistical things and do more than just write down the three names that pop into their head, but you just don't know.
You're right. And well, hopefully he does win it. He certainly is deserving. He did win the Fielding Bible Award. I actually was surprised Logan Forsythe wasn't a finalist for the Gold Glove, because I thought he had a stupendous year, statistically and otherwise.
I agree. And then that, you know, if anything, and not, you know, as you said, not despite the year that Evan Longoria had, but you look at the other third baseman around the league, and Josh Donaldson would certainly be one that comes to mind, and some other guys. You look at the other third baseman around the league, and it was a little bit of a surprise that Evan finished in the top three in the voting. Then you look at the other second baseman around the league, and it's a surprise that Logan Forsythe didn't finish in the top three. And I think, to me, that's a little bit of this cautionary tale that I was just talking about. You know, it's a guy who kind of emerged on the scene, didn't have a lot of reputation. Now, Kiermaier certainly should have gotten more attention because he was on a lot of the highlight shows and top plays and things like that, but you just don't know when it's a voting process.
Now, we'll find out who wins those Gold Gloves next week. Also next week is the GM meetings, and you've already had a chance to chat with Matt. How active are the Rays going to be at the GM meetings? What usually takes place? I would think overall this has to be an active month for the Rays because they have 40-man roster decisions to make.
They do, and you know, and to start with that part of it, and just for people listening that don't follow the process maybe as closely, you know, by November 20th, the Rays have to set their 40-man roster. And what that means is there's certain prospects they have to put on the roster So thus, because they carry a full roster, there's guys they have to take off. So one thing the GM meetings affords them is the opportunity ahead of that deadline to explore the trade market for some guys that they were going to probably have to get rid of anyway. In other words, last year we saw them trade Jeremy Hellickson shortly after the GM meetings, basically at the end of that week. Obviously, that deal was worked out during those meetings. So it may not be anything that happens during the 3 or 4 days over in Boca Raton, but certainly between then and November 20th, and there's going to be some guys that maybe just don't fit. There'll be some guys the Rays may go to and say, hey, we may take you off the roster, but we want to sign you back to minor league deals. There's different ways they can manipulate the roster, but they definitely have to figure out some ways to create space. There's at least, you know, I can think of 3 or 4 guys that need to come on the roster. There's guys coming off the 60-day DL that have to go on the roster. So by rough count, I think they're going to need about 7 or 8 spots.
You're right.
I think there's going to be some difficult decisions to make.
You're right. And I would think the obvious ones to add are Blake Snell, Taylor Guerrieri, and Jake Faria. And then, okay, Taylor Motter is a consideration. There are several others like him.
Yeah, I think those four, to me, are the ones that jump out. And Motter, because of the versatility. You know, I've heard, you know, different. You talk to different Rays people at different times of year. Obviously, you're going to get different perspectives on things. But I've talked to some Rays people who, you know, have literally mentioned Taylor Motter as a possibility to be the shortstop next year. You know, so there could be everywhere from not being on the 40-man roster to being in the starting lineup. So there's all kinds of possibilities for some of those guys. So, you know, let's say they need 8 spots to create. It's hard to go down that 40-man roster right now and find 8 guys that you'd be willing just to part with. So thus that segues us into the importance of the GM meetings. Is it's a 3 or 4 day get-together. They literally do have meetings. They talk about rules. They talk with, you know, the commissioner's office people. They talk about replay. They talk about things they want to change. You know, there have been conversations about, you know, what should they do with the September roster? Should they really allow 40 guys to be active? There's going to be talk about adding netting at ballparks, whether to make fans more safe or not, or whether that takes away from the fan experience. There's all kinds of things. Sometimes owners show up there. Sometimes the commissioner's around. So there's all kinds of avenues for business to get done. But the most interesting part, obviously, for fans is, does any trade spin out of there? And typically, there's not stuff announced at the meetings, but as we mentioned with the Hellickson trade, stuff gets put together there and happens fairly quickly after.
And this year is different from last year for the Rays in that they're not having a president of baseball operations changeover. They don't have to look for a manager, but they still have to fill Matt Arnold's spot. And look, Chaim Bloom was a finalist for 2 GM spots. Is there any chance Mark Shapiro is going to look at him in Toronto? Would a team take another from same division? Is that possible? Or try to?
Well, certainly we've seen so much movement this year, and a number of teams have adopted, you know, this kind of model of a president and a GM. The Rays have not. They've stuck with Matt Silverman, you know, as the president, and kind of have these 2 dueling VPs in Chaim Bloom and Eric Neander. And you're right, Chaim seems to definitely be on a GM track. I don't know that he'll come up as far as in the Toronto situation, but I think, you know, it's evident that since he interviewed for 2 jobs this past offseason, you know, he may be headed that way. My sense at this point, as we sit here, you know, today in the first week of November, is the Rays are operating with the assumption that Chaim Bloom's going to stay with them for this season. They're going to fill Matt Arnold's spot internally, and I think they may have been related. If Chaim had left, you may have seen them go outside and maybe try to bring in somebody who is worked at that upper level, but I think you'll see them promote from within to create Matt Arnold, to fill Matt Arnold's spot, keep Chaim Bloom around for this offseason. And as you say, there's a little bit more normalcy here. Last year, they were still conducting a manager search. They were doing manager interviews during the GM meetings, which were out in Arizona. This year, they don't have that hanging over their head. Matt Silverman is obviously more comfortable in his position. Their delegation of authority, you know, all those lines of communication, all that should be in better shape. And that doesn't necessarily translate to they're going to make a better trade because, you know, they've had an extra year to work on this. But it just does allow for more of a normal work process and more of the ability to focus on things. I mean, they made 9 trades last offseason despite all the stuff going on.
And look, you're more focused. You can do a better job on your work. At least that's what they tell me.
Yeah, I've heard that same rumor too, but I don't know.
I just came back from the Fall League. I know the Rays have a lot of people out there, and you look at the trades the Rays made last year, they acquired a lot of guys who they saw in the Fall League. Mark Sapp for Cesar Ramos. They got Daniel Robertson in a deal last year. So, you know, this is also a time to look at other teams' prospects.
Absolutely. And you know, most of the deals the Rays tend to make, as we've seen over the years, are trading more established players for less established players who have more years of control. That's kind of their basic philosophy. So that fits in exactly well. You may have been out there seeing some future Rays, and maybe you didn't know it, or maybe you didn't know it yet, and we'll find out in the next couple weeks or so. But, you know, those kind of players that are at the fall league level are usually, you know, some of the more advanced, younger prospects, and then those are the type of guys the Rays like. Daniel Robertson, a great example. You know, you saw him play while you were out there. He may not be ready to be the starting shortstop, you know, on April 5th this year, April 4th this year, but I think he's a guy the Rays expect to be their starting shortstop eventually, whether that's midseason, whether that's next season. But sometime along the way, part of acquiring him, you know, from the A's and giving up Ben Zobrist was they thought Daniel Robertson had the potential to be a starting shortstop and to be so for a while.
And that will certainly determine how that trade turns out in large part. Mark, are you going to Boca or do you get some rest now?
I am going to head over to Boca for a couple days and see what we can stir up out there, and plans obviously to go to Nashville for the winter meetings where, you know, things tend to get done, you know, more so, and that, you know, whereas the GM meetings, maybe that more seeds are planted and the winter meetings are where things are cultivated. And, you know, the Rays are at a stage where, you know, free agent wise, they tend to be at the back end of the market. They're usually more of, you know, mid to late January shoppers. Last year, Cabrera was a little early even, and then it was early in January, but typically, they have to let the market settle a little bit. They've got some of their own free agents. I think you'll see all those guys be allowed to go out and test the market. And what they do in November and December is not necessarily their roster. We've learned over the years that the Rays roster sometimes doesn't get set until, you know, even a week or two before spring training opens.
I think biggest thing they have to figure out is who's next year's shortstop, and I think it comes from outside. What's your take on that right now?
Well, I thought so, that they would find another player to take a similar deal like they did with Cabrera, do a one-year deal. And I know that sentiment's out there, and an interesting name joined that pool just this past week with Alexi Ramirez becoming a free agent when the White Sox declined his option. And, you know, he would seem to fit that mold, a veteran guy that, you know, maybe wants to play a few more years and would take a one-year deal at a reasonable salary for the opportunity to play every day. The one thing the Rays have, and then you keep this in mind, and it may not come to relevancy until January or so, but if the Rays want to go outside to find a shortstop, the one thing they can offer somebody is playing time. And those are hard to find. There's only going to be a handful of teams looking for starting shortstops. So if you're a guy who wants to play, Ian Desmond could be another guy in that situation. If he doesn't find an offer from a team that's going to let him be the guy, and, you know, some teams may offer him more money and, you know, want him as a utility guy, as a backup, move him around, those type of players. But if a guy wants to be a starting shortstop and the Rays can get a good deal in their favor, they have that currency of offering playing time, and that can be very appealing.
Well said, Mark. Enjoy Boca. We will talk to you soon.
All right, Neil. I'm glad you had a good time in Arizona.
Good stuff from Mark Topkin from the Tampa Bay Times, and we'll be keeping a close eye on what's going on with the GM meetings next week and also the Gold Glove Awards. You can follow us at Rays Radio, at Neil Solons on Twitter. You can also go to our blog, raysradio.moblogs.com, and there today and during the course of the next week, we'll be putting some stuff up on what we saw in the Arizona Fall League, and we'll be posting some of the great video work that we did out there, raysbaseball.com/prospect spotlight. Now, one of the people I had a chance to speak with out in Arizona was Director of Minor League Operations, Mitch Lukovich, and he gave me an idea as to what he hopes the players who are in Arizona get out of the program.
There's a great benefit for us to have our players here simply because it's a really good league. Our players will come here and find out how fast the game is. And this is just the Arizona Fall League. So can you imagine what the big leagues are? It's a step in their development, for their training, to know what they're taking on in the game at the next level and the next level to hopefully help them become very good major league players.
Can it become eye-opening for them in a sense?
Well, there's no doubt it's eye-opening. I can tell you for all of them, even Daniel Robertson, who was here last year, it's a different crew. It's a speed-up type environment. The fields are fast. The air is thin. Pitchers, you got to be a little more careful who, because of the competition, because of the stadiums. It hones on what they need to specialize in. But regardless how they do statistically, because of the speed of the game, we look forward to seeing how they can grow as a player when they start the season next year for us in the minor leagues.
How can it benefit the next year? How do you think the players can use it?
Simply by seeing how fast the game is and taking what they learn here to build on it for the next level and next level. It's not A-ball. And there's some A-ball players here, but there's some really good players that can really hit and really pitch. And the big leagues is the best competition in the world. That's what they're striving for. And that's why we have levels in the minor leagues. We have our kids making up some innings here, making up some at-bats, specifically with Gillespie and specifically with Robertson. But also, it's the competition that's really challenging them all and preparing them for the next level.
That's Mitch Lukovich, the Rays Director of Minor League Operations, and full interviews and a lot of the pieces that we've got from our time in the Arizona Fall League can be seen at RaysBaseball.com/Prospect Spotlight. Our next show will be next week, when at that point we'll know if there was a gold glove for one Kevin Kiermaier. We'll have that and more. Thanks for being with us.